that this battle is very dire. You know, people are being killed on a daily basis. Congo's territorial integrity is affected. The Congolese have called for Rwandan troops to leave, and all of us around the world, we have to do everything in our power to join the Free Congo campaign to put pressure on Rwanda and any negative forces so that Congolese can have a chance to change the country.
Kambale Musavuli, we want to thank you so much for being with us. Congolese analyst and activist now based in Accra, Ghana. Policy analyst with the Center for Research on the Congo-Kinshasa. We'll link to your piece in People's Dispatch. It's headlined, "The Battle for Control of Goma Continues." To see our extended interview with Kambale from a few days ago, you can go to democracynow.org, as well as a full interview with the director of the Oscar-nominated film Soundtrack to a Coup d'Etat that includes a number of clips of this documentary about U.S. involvement, Belgian involvement with the assassination of the Congolese independence leader Patrice Lumumba, and how the U.S. State Department deployed black jazz musicians who would later revolt against what they had done in Congo by protesting at the U.N. General Assembly after Lumumba was killed, shouting assassin and murderer. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. This is KBOO Portland. From its founding, KBOO's purpose has been to serve as a community-driven alternative to mainstream media. In a new year, with numerous executive orders from a new presidential administration and the rise of misinformation, KBOO affirms its duty to serve its community. KBOO, its programmers, volunteers, and staff do this by bringing you accurate information, by giving space to underrepresented voices, and by uplifting arts and culture. In these uncertain times, KBOO seeks to be a guiding light for those who are scared, those who are affected, and those who are fighting the good fight. KBOO stands with the immigrant community, the LGBTQIA+ community, the disability community, and all of those affected by the new administration. We stand here at 90.7 FM in Portland, 104.3 FM in the Corvallis-Philomath area, 91.9 FM in Hood River, and at KBOO.FM.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, thousands of people in the Pacific Northwest are feeling the impact of Trump's and Elon Musk's severe budget and job cuts. Oregon's leading voices in Congress are trying to fight back. And this is a special day for celebrating and protecting the air we breathe in Oregon. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, February 20th, 2025. I'm Annette Newell. Thanks so much for joining us tonight. The Pacific Northwest is feeling the impact of President Trump's mass layoffs and attempted buyouts of federal workers. The Forest Service has laid off 2,000 workers, and employees say they're worried about how they will manage the coming wildfire season in Oregon and the West. OPB interviewed nearly a dozen Forest Service workers who feared the layoffs would be catastrophic for the coming fire season. The Forest Service fired ecologists, park rangers, forestry technicians, and a backup team of certified firefighters. 600 jobs have also been lost at the Bonneville Power Administration, a nonprofit federal agency that provides hydropower to much of the Northwest. Some of those firings had been walked back as of last weekend. The jobs that were let go, electricians, scientists, and cybersecurity experts, will be hard to replace. Oregon U.S. Senators Ron Wyden and Jeff Merkley wrote a letter to the president calling the layoffs at Bonneville Power, quote, reckless but also financially ludicrous. The letter continues, quote, employees on the ground are already warning that these actions will make it nearly impossible to strengthen and expand the grid as needed. Instead, BPA will be forced into damage control mode, struggling just to keep the lights on. This is not speculation. It is the reality voiced by those who operate our energy infrastructure every day, end of quote. Dozens were also fired from the Hanford nuclear site in Washington, which is run by the Department of Energy. Those fired include safety engineers. It's unclear how these firings will impact Hanford's new nuclear waste cleanup plan that was announced in early January. A crowd of more than 700 people packed Oregon Congresswoman Suzanne Bonamici's town hall in Washington County at Century High School in Hillsboro.
I had 6,000 calls just last week.
Wow.
We try to get a response to everyone, but please be patient. My staff does an amazing job, but 6,000 in 1 week. I want to say I hear you. Keep up the calls, keep up the emails, because they do make a difference. And I'll tell you that most of the calls have been from people who are really worried. Worried about today, tomorrow, but really worried about the future of our country, the health of our planet, the future of democracy. And Donald Trump has already issued several harmful, illegal, and unconstitutional executive orders. And there are some things you can do by executive order. You can't amend the Constitution by executive order, right? They've tried to shut down federal agencies. The unelected multi-billionaire Elon Musk and his Doge team sent letters to government employees telling them they could quit now or be fired later. They should go do something more productive. You know who got those letters right before the plane crash in Washington, D.C.? The air traffic controllers. So these letters that are going out to federal employees, they're terrible. This is not the way that we should be improving government. I'm always looking for smarter, better ways to do things. That's one of my responsibilities, is oversight. But this Doge and what Elon Musk is doing is pure chaos. They're not protecting privacy. They're not protecting personal information, which is really concerning. Social Security and Medicare information and employment records are at risk. And they don't really have the background to understand the consequences of what they're doing. Tesla and the private sector, they're not like the government. They actually broke into one of the websites but let it open for security breaches. They don't know what they're doing. They actually fired the people who protect our nuclear weapons stockpile. They reversed that when they realized what they had done, but that's not the kind of mistake you can make, right? So I'm here to say I will defend Oregon values. I always look at the work I'm doing as whether it will create a better future for the people I represent. And what makes a difference to Oregonians? What about our Oregon economy? What about all the federal programs? We have been able to get money for transportation. We've been able to get small business support. I represent Clatsop and Tillamook counties over on the coast. NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, they run the weather service, and they do a lot of ocean research. That's what makes our coastal community thrive, and that's important. National security is important. Head Start is important. What's really important, too, is the research that happens at our great universities. I went to University of Oregon, but I know that there are probably some beavers here, too, but all of our research... Research institutes, OHSU, they're facing these cuts that are really serious to the research enterprise. What message do we send around the world when we're cutting education, we don't believe in science, and we're not going to do research anymore? I'm here to fight for those Oregon values, and I care a lot about education.
And on the U.S. Senate floor, Oregon Senator Ron Wyden also spoke out about what he says are dangerous cuts and actions.
As the Senate careens towards a budget showdown, Donald Trump seems to consider himself royalty. Elon Musk seems to believe he calls the shot. They're trampling over the Constitution and violating laws as they try to rip apart so much of what makes America special. And they're clearing the way for financial predators and Wall Street scammers to steal from innocent Americans. They're gutting medical research day after the deadliest airplane crash on American soil in decades. They fired hundreds of people who work on airline safety. They're slashing the university system, which is the envy of the world and a huge source of economic growth and opportunity in America. They fired hundreds of people who manage our nuclear arsenal, because whatever Doge ordered those fires didn't seem to have any idea what the Department of Energy does. National parks closed because they don't have enough staff. That's going to be a disaster for rural communities who depend on tourism. Farmers miss payments they're owed. Nobody I know voted for this chaos. I heard firsthand from Oregonians at town hall meetings. Thousands of Oregonians were in attendance. They shared their real fears and legitimate concerns about how the slash-and-burn approach we're seeing from Trump and Musk is a recipe for a lower quality of life in America, and people will lose their lives as a result of these attacks on healthcare and medical research. Unfortunately, there's barely been a peep from Republicans. In fact, I heard more support for Trump than criticism of this lawlessness from the other side. And it's business as usual here in the Senate. What's so important to my colleagues on the other side that they're letting Trump and Musk get away with this destruction. It is another round of breaks for billionaires and big corporations. That's Trump's plan to pay back his supporters who bought the election for him. The centerpiece of the plan is extending his 2017 tax law at a cost of more than $4 trillion. Ultra-wealthy individuals who rake in millions each year would get tax breaks of hundreds of thousands of dollars. Families who live paycheck to paycheck would be lucky to get enough to cover groceries for a week. What an outrageous imbalance. Trump and Republicans want typical Americans to be satisfied with peanuts compared to the growing fortunes of Elon Musk and Trump's other billionaire donors. Trump wants even more breaks for big profitable corporations. Senate Republicans want new giveaways to the ultra-wealthy. How would it be paid for? By booting tens of millions of Americans off their health insurance, increasing child hunger, laying off hundreds of thousands of manufacturing workers, and raising the cost of living here. The Republican chair of the House Budget Committee had a whole list of destructive proposals a few weeks ago, dozens of pages long, item after item. It looked like the kind of plan you'd design if your goal was to wipe out the middle class in America and push tens of millions of families into poverty. But this was a real document from a Republican committee chair. A couple of lowlights stuck out to us on the Senate Finance Committee. Trump and Republicans want to take a wrecking ball to the Medicaid program. It's a devastating prospect for tens of millions of Americans, and I heard about it in Oregon all this weekend. Medicaid pays for 2 out of 3 nursing home beds. Where do American families turn when nursing homes no longer accept Medicaid due to these Republican cuts? What my colleagues are saying is, who's going to take care of our parents and our grandparents? Medicaid covers 30 million kids. That includes half of all American kids with special needs. Cuts to Medicaid will set these kids back for the rest of their lives. Hospitals, nursing homes, other providers in rural communities all over America barely hang on. They depend on Medicaid. If the Republican cuts go through, rural America is going to become a health care desert. The clean energy tax cuts, which I worked on for a full decade, Mr. President, are another disaster in the making. Republicans are looking at wiping out a host of tax incentives for clean energy to pay for a big chunk of their handouts to the top. Nobody is rooting harder for Republicans to succeed on this than the Chinese government. That's because if Republicans follow through and gut the clean energy tax credits that we passed in 2022, it will be a total surrender to China on clean energy. Hundreds of thousands of American jobs would be destroyed. Energy prices will jump, and that'll hurt working families and small businesses. The jobs and investment we've attracted to America over the last few years, that goes to China and other countries that win the clean energy arms race at our expense. You look at that document from the House Budget Committee chair, and it's one item after another that's going to clobber typical families and communities across the land. The tax increase on single moms. They're considering a tax increase that will raise the cost of owning a home. They're considering cuts to infrastructure that will hurt local economies. They're even considering taxing scholarships for kids looking to go to college. The only people who won't feel the pain of these hardships are the ultra-wealthy.
During this Black History Month, Multnomah County held a special ceremony honoring the challenges, triumphs, and contributions of the African-American community. One of the speakers was Multnomah County Commissioner Shannon Singleton.
Black History Month and Futures is about action. I celebrate my own heritage and the history of the Black diaspora. I feel that because I know this history, I'm prepared to handle the challenges of today. I'm here because of my ancestors, like my great aunties and my grandmother, who adopted my three uncles when mental health was deinstitutionalized and they faced homelessness. She refused to let the injustices of racism in our systems dictate the outcomes in the lives of those around her. I stand here because of Black organizers, social workers, and political activists who demand justice and equity for our people. My path here was blueprinted by Black electeds like Gladys McCoy and Loretta Smith, who took seats at the table and in some cases brought their own chairs, as Shelley Chisholm would say. These women prioritized our communities to ensure equity in how Multnomah County distributes resources. It is inspiring that even though Black women and femmes are some of the most heavily impacted community members, we continue to step into leadership to support and uplift our communities. This year's theme is African Americans and labor. This is near and dear to me because of my commitment to community benefits and workforce equity. Black people and those in the African diaspora have played a vital role in the workforce. So when people speak about restorative justice, I say there is no restorative justice without economic investment and liberation of the Black community. To put it simply, buy Black. Throughout history, Black people have given everything to this country, and buying Black is part of paying back what we owe. I'm excited to also get a chance to work with Commissioner Jones-Dixon on transforming the workforce of the mega projects and infrastructure projects in our community into giving back to Black community that was devastated by forced labor, forced migration, and theft of community wealth through our former transportation projects. The racist systems and tactics used by those today may have different names, but they are using the same Jim Crow logic and strategies. Do not mistake our celebrating wins as being content with inequities. Do not take our joy in being a community as being unwilling to fight or to defend. Our community is resilient, our resolve is unwavering, and we are determined to pursue equity.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for KBOO News In Depth. At 6, it's Rose City Native Radio, then at 7, American Indian Airways. Tonight's weather, partly cloudy to cloudy skies, a low 41. Tomorrow's weather, clouds continue early, then partial clearing, a high of 51. Today in history, on this date in 1962, John Glenn became the first American to orbit Earth on board the Friendship 7 spacecraft. The quote of the day is from John Glenn. Don't tune out, cop out, or drop out. Don't give in to complacency and cynicism. Today marked a clean air day of action at Oregon State Legislature in Salem. Mary Pevedos, the founder and co-executive director of the nonprofit Neighbors for Clean Air. She explains the actions that state lawmakers are looking at right now that could impact the air you breathe.
Some of it is stuff we're really excited about, and some of it is stuff we get a little bit worried about. We're thrilled that one of our things that we're very excited about is a bill, HB 3062, and it will have a hearing in the Emergency Management Committee. So that bill is going to maybe get overrepresented amount of attention in our work this week. I've got our blue sky bills, the ones that we're excited about and we feel like really are great for clean air, and HB 3062, which puts health and public health protections in our land use system, where the land use system, especially as we've developed UGBs, has been developed to protect, really, frankly, farmland and forest from sprawl. We feel like it's beyond time to protect the communities then that are bearing the brunt of that infill. And we've realized that in 20 goals across our land use system, there are none that are there to designed to protect communities and public health. Another one that we think is really important and just got introduced, HB 2738, and it seeks to eliminate lead from the Portland International Racetrack. There are still races of automobiles that use leaded gas right there, very close to neighborhoods. And this has been a longstanding problem. And that is Rep. Nelson's bill in his district to eliminate the use of leaded gas at PIR. And then I'd like to touch on a couple of the worrisome bills. HB 3119 is probably one of the most significant worrisome bills that we've been facing. And it's really an attempt for the trucking industry to roll back rules that DEQ passed, adopted in 21, to move us along with California towards cleaner diesel emission standards, as well as electrification in the trucking industry. So their manufacturing standards set to decarbonize one of the most pollution-intensive sectors of transportation in the medium and heavy-duty truck sector. They will, as these rules, because they're manufacturing standards, we know they have long runways of implementation. We think they're incredibly reasonable and a way to move the trucking industry forward to a low and zero emissions future. The trucking industry has decided that it's not wanting to comply with these rules, so they've asked for DEQ to delay. But even worse, with HB 3119, they're actually trying to supersede DEQ's authority by getting the legislature to undermine a decision that was taken by the agency. And that is even more problematic, I think, especially in this environment of what we're seeing with the federal government. For our state to give up any ground on state authority seems really dangerous at a time when we know that our federal government really wants to burn it all down. So we feel like there's even more at stake than just these truck rules in terms of undermining state authority. And we really need to see our state legislators hold the line on these rules. HB 3119, it's already had its hearings, and which brings me to transportation, which is the other big behemoth of this legislative session, because it's a massive budget bill to allocate money towards transportation. And so we are expecting it to be multi-billion dollars to finance transportation operations and maintenance. And it will include the cost, the funding sources being developed by Joint Transportation Committee. And so what we're going to be advocating for in a multi-billion dollar package that's going to be very multifaceted is, are we making our investments moving towards the future that we want that meets our climate and health and equity goals? Or are we going to stay stuck in a paradigm of continuing to invest in things that perpetuate a single passenger vehicle transportation assumption? And that's where we're putting our energy, is to continue to advocate for the values of clean air equity and future thinking transportation investments. It's a big behemoth. But I think, again, just reiterating to our legislators that we expect this massive amount of public investment to move us forward, not backwards, is one of the key aspects of what we're going to be looking for. That means active transportation. That means really looking at the opportunity to invest in public transportation over single passenger vehicle infrastructure. It means not widening and increasing the capacity of our existing freeway. It means equitable understanding of congestion pricing and tolling that will really help alleviate the congestion while not overburdening certain communities. It means fair and equitable distribution of transportation dollars across the region that helps everybody in Oregon move where they want, when they want, in as climate-friendly and efficient way as possible.
A Shore Power bill would aim at improving the state of Washington's air quality. Isabel Charlet reports communities downwind of major Washington ports have been struggling with poor air quality from diesel fumes for decades.
New legislation would transition more ocean-going container ships to run off electricity instead of diesel while they are docked at Washington ports. Proponents of the bill say implementing more shore power would improve air quality and cut emissions. Ships still need power when they are in port and often leave engines idling. The diesel fumes have created health problems for nearby Puget Sound residents, including increased risk of cancer and other serious health effects. Representative Julia Reed introduced the Shore Power Bill.
We need both of these partners to work together towards a common goal of creating shore power across Washington state in order to get this to work.
Reed notes the transition to electric power for Washington's ports will take years to implement and will be expensive. But she adds the shipping industry is motivated by the high cost of diesel to find alternative fuels, which are already in use in Europe and California. Georgetown and South Park, two neighborhoods in southern Seattle, as well as parts of Tacoma, face severe health disparities due to the impacts of diesel fuel in other industries. Life expectancy is up to 20 years lower in these areas compared to other parts of the state. Reed says she recognizes this has been an issue for these communities for years.
A lot of poor, browner communities tend to be the ones that are closest to these industrial impacts. And also those communities have been speaking out for themselves.
I'm Isabel Charlet.
At least eight states have introduced bills that would protect pesticide companies from legal action. Eric Tegedoff reports a bill like this might be coming to Idaho, where it wouldn't be the first time lawmakers have tried this.
Research, including from the University of Idaho, has shown a link between agricultural chemicals and cancer rates in adults and children. Head of the Idaho Organization of Resource Councils, Irene Ruiz, says pesticide manufacturers know they're selling something potentially harmful.
To throw the responsibility on a small farmer, on a pesticide sprayer, on other folks, that's just not a fair thing to do. And for them to absolve themselves from this liability is not a good thing in the long run.
A poll found 90% of Idahoans oppose legally shielding pesticide companies. In 2024, lawmakers introduced a bill to provide legal protection for companies that failed to warn people about health and safety issues from pesticides, but the bill died in the Senate. The sponsor of the legislation says potential lawsuits create uncertainty for farmers and ranchers. Baruez says there isn't enough warning about these chemicals and their impacts. She adds, we don't know how many people have become ill from pesticides.
I used to be a farm worker, and I know some of the ills that I have comes from pesticides. My family and friends and people that I know have long-term effects from that, and there needs to be better ways and better resources and better studies to help us understand if we are getting harmed by pesticides or how to prevent them in a better way.
I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Experts are calling for safer and more fire-resistant buildings in the wake of the Los Angeles area fires because burning plastic releases toxic pollutants like dioxin. Suzanne Potter reports doctors warn that kids, the elderly, and people with lung conditions are vulnerable to toxic air pollution from wildfire smoke and ash.
Many building materials are made from plastics, including flooring and carpeting, floor sealants, siding, insulation, paints, and plumbing. Kaya Allen Sugarman with the group Physicians for Social Responsibility says the toxic chemicals found in urban wildfire smoke have been linked to respiratory and developmental conditions, hormone disruption, and even cancer.
Plastics don't just burn, they release some of the most toxic chemicals. These pollutants don't just disappear. They can travel distances in ash, and they settle in the air, water, and soil, contaminating entire communities.
Experts recommend using an air purifier or HVAC system with a HEPA filter inside and wearing an N95 mask outside if you're downwind of the fire zones. If you have to help clean up toxic ash, use gloves and avoid dry sweeping, which stirs ash into the air. Use wet methods or a HEPA vacuum. Alan Sugarman says when rebuilding, people should choose safer, non-plastic materials wherever possible.
We need stronger regulations on toxic building materials and investment in sustainable, fire-resistant construction. Because the more we use plastics in our buildings, the more we set ourselves up for long-term harm, especially as wildfires become more frequent and intense.
I'm Suzanne Potter.
Tribes are responding to South Dakota's Black Hills National Forest Stewardship Bill. The Navajo Nation Council and Utah leaders celebrate a water rights settlement, and there's a festival featuring pagan dancing that was once banned by a church. With these stories and much more, here's Antonia Gonzalez and National Native News.
In South Dakota, the Senate passed a resolution Wednesday to promote the long-term health and viability of the Black Hills National Forest, brought by Spearfish Republican Senator Randy Dibert. The bill was widely supported, though questions were raised by Oglala Lakota Democratic Senator Red Dawn Foster about issues like tribal involvement in the long-term forest plan and the treatment of old-growth trees. Dibert addressed concerns.
The tribes have a cooperative agency status. It's above and beyond the local governments. They will have a seat at the table on any action that's taken in the hills. On the old growth, that's part of their management plan, too. They have guidelines in their management plan when they do a harvest to acknowledge those types of growth and other unique situations.
The Black Hills are considered sacred in Lakota culture, and Indigenous people have historically been underrepresented in decision-making for forest management. On Wednesday, members of the Navajo Nation Council joined Utah state officials and lawmakers at the state capitol in Salt Lake City to celebrate a water rights settlement. The Utah Navajo Nation Water Rights Settlement grants the Navajo Nation a water allocation of 81,500 acre feet per year, with rights to both surface and groundwater from the Colorado River within Utah. The settlement also includes significant funding for water infrastructure development. Navajo Council members say this comes after years of advocacy and will provide Navajo communities with essential needs, like bringing running water to homes. According to the tribe, there are about 6,000 residents on the Utah side of the Navajo Nation, and about half of them live without running water. Dancers from North Slope villages recently gathered for Kiviak, a festival in Utqiagvik, Alaska. KMBA's Alaska Desk reporter, Alona Nyden, has more.
Susan Patkatak was not allowed to participate in Inupiaq dancing growing up. But last week, the 19-year-old performed in front of hundreds of people and received a standing ovation. It was a new dance she created that told the story of reconnecting to the tradition.
It's about how I wasn't allowed to dance when I was younger.
Patkatak is a member of Bear Dancers, one of 11 dance groups that took part in Kiviak. The event, also known as the Messenger Feast, brought together at least 700 participants. It included a running race, gift-giving, sharing indigenous food, and, most importantly, Inupiaq dancing. For performers like David Elahguak, it was a chance to reconnect with relatives and friends and uplift each other through the traditional art form.
It's like a healing part of us for coming out of the long, dark winter days.
Kiviak is a long-time tradition held during the years of successful harvests, when coastal Inupiaq tribes would trade their catch and products with their inland neighbors. The tradition was discontinued in the early 20th century because the church viewed Inupiaq dancing as pagan. The festival finally restarted in the late 80s. This year's acts included traditional ceremonial dances, like the box drum dance. The legend behind it describes the mother eagle teaching the Inupiaq people to drum and celebrate. The event also featured some brand new dances, including the one from Patkatak with the bear dancers. Patkatak only started dancing 2 years ago, and for a while it was hard for her to be left out of the practice. The lyrics of the song she performed at the recent festival describe the joyful feeling of being a part of the dancing tradition.
We create songs and dances to express ourselves and to express our stories.
Patkatak dedicated her dance to elders and everyone else who yearns to reconnect to their culture. I am Alona Naidin.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, February 20th, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Althea Billings, Eric Tegedoff, Suzanne Potter, and Isabel Charlet. The producer is Annette Newell, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Public News Service and Native Voice One. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings.